Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Read, read, books, books. Read, read, books, books. Read, read, books, books. Hold them in your hand, and you'll hippity hoppity clippity cloppity off to a different land.
So if you imagine a pinball machine and you pull back that thing in an old-fashioned pinball machine and you let the ball go, and then it bangs all around inside the machine and boom, 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 ding, 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 boom, boom. That's sort of what our book pick segment has been like this week. We originally were scheduled for Tuesday, as we always are, Tuesday at 10, and then we got all moved around because of the storm, and then we got all moved around for breaking news, and so here we are finally Wednesday at 10:35. We're talking to our dear friend Connie Brooks from Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. So if you're a regular listener to the program and you thought you missed the book pick segment, no, you did not. It is here, and Connie is with us. She has her book list for the week. She has traveled around the literary globe for us, and we couldn't be more thrilled. Connie, good morning,
good
and thank
morning.
You very much for being so accommodating.
It's not a problem. And with the storm, it turns out I could have driven down yesterday, but, you know, there you have it.
So. Well, you know. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's great to have you here. So you have a wonderful list of books. Where would you like to begin?
All right. Well, I wanted to start with a novel I brought in to talk about a new novel. It's called Black River by Sarah Hulse. And I love a well-told Western, and Black River is just that, tense and haunting. The novel tells the story of a man involved years ago in a prison riot as he returns to the town and the convict who changed the course of his life. When former corrections officer Wes Carver returns to Black River, he carries two things in the cab of his truck, his wife's ashes and a letter from the prison parole board. The convict who held him hostage during a riot 20 years ago is being considered for release. Wes has been away from Black River ever since the riot. He had grown up in this small Montana town and was known as a talented natural fiddler who took great solace in his playing. But during that riot, a prisoner named Bobby Williams changed everything for Wes and took away his ability to play.
It is Black River by Sarah Hulse, and sounds great.
It does sound great.
All right,
really,
next.
It's, I don't know. I do. It's very atmospheric, and I love the setting, so... Now, another kind of atmospheric novel, I brought in a book called Sweetland by Michael Crummy. Now, Michael Crummy wrote Galore a few years back, which was set in Newfoundland, and we return to that same terrain in Sweetland. The scarcely populated town of Sweetland rests on the shore of a remote island off the coast of Newfoundland. Its slow decline finally reaches a head when the mainland government offers each islander a generous resettlement package, with the sole stipulation being that everyone must leave the island, and it's an all-or-nothing offer. Moses Sweetland, 70 years old, unmarried and childless, whose ancestors founded the village, is the only one to refuse. Moses watches as one by one his neighbors, an eccentric cast of characters, leave. Moses is a melancholy figure, and he grapples with an eroding way of life and the possibility of his own very real extinction. And I think that anyone out there who enjoyed Annie Proulx's The Shipping News will enjoy this portrait of a man and his rugged, remote island.
Sweetland by Michael Crummy. Next up.
One more novel, The Magician's Lie by Greer McAllister. In The Magician's Lie, a notorious female illusionist stands accused of her husband's murder and has only one night to convince a small-town policeman of her innocence. The amazing Ardenne is the most famous female illusionist of her day, renowned for her trick of sawing a man in half on stage. One night in Iowa, with a young policeman, Virgil Holt, watching from the audience, she swaps her trademark saw for a fire axe. Is it a new version of her illusion or an all-too-real murder? When Ardenne's husband is found lifeless beneath the stage later that night, the answer seems clear. But when Virgil happens upon the fleeing magician and takes her into custody, she has a very different story to tell. Even handcuffed and alone, Ardenne is far from powerless, and what she reveals is as unbelievable as it is spellbinding. over the course of one eerie night, Virgil must decide whether to turn Arden in or set her free.
The Magician's Lie by Greer McAllister, and those are the novels.
Those
That's the fiction.
Novels.
So
yeah.
Now we go into nonfiction.
Nonfiction, and the first is a book of history, and this is a book called Gateway to Freedom: The Hidden History of the Underground Railroad by Eric Foner. Foner, a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian, tackles the little-known history of the Underground Railroad in his new book, Gateway to Freedom. The history of the Underground Railroad has been shrouded in mystery and myth. The network of free blacks and white abolitionists who helped battle slave catchers and aided fugitives fleeing from the South were forced to operate in secrecy due to hostile laws. Little was recorded on the activities of the network, and even those active in it would have had very little visibility into the broader efforts. But Foner presents startling evidence, including a recently discovered detailed record of slave escapes secretly kept by Sidney Howard Gay, one of the key organizers in New York City. Foner debunks many of the myths of the Underground Railroad and also places the subversive activities of the railroad in the broader context of pre-Civil War history. Now, much of Foner's book focuses on the Underground Railroad activities in New York City. We have an upcoming Curiosity Forum talk here in Cambridge that focuses on the Underground Railroad and how it operated in the Capital Region in upstate New York. And that talk's on Sunday, February 15th at 4 o'clock. We're going to be joined by Paul and Mary Liz Stewart, who are independent researchers, and they're also scholars in residence at Russell Sage College. And they're going to bring their talk about the Underground Railroad movement in the Capital Region, and that's going to be at the Freight Depot Theater at Hubbard Hall here in Cambridge.
They've done great work, and it'll be a fascinating talk. It is February 15th at 4 o'clock at Hubbard Hall, and you can find out more by going to battenkillbooks.com. battenkillbooks.com, February 15th at 4 p.m. Next.
Another nonfiction. This is Chasing the Scream, The First and Last Days of the War on Drugs by Johan Hari. 2015 marks a century of the war on drugs in the United States, 100 years since the first arrests under the Harrison Act. Facing down this anniversary, journalist Johan Hari was witnessing a close friend bottoming out on cocaine and heroin, as he also considered the bigger picture. Why does the so-called war continue when most people now think it has failed? The reporter set out on a two-year round-the-world journey to find out how the war began, how it has affected people around the globe, and how we can move beyond it. Hari learns of dramatic personal stories along the way, from a transsexual crack dealer in New York who wants to learn who killed her mother, to a doctor who pushed the decriminalization in Portugal of all drugs from cannabis to crack. The title itself comes from a formative story of Harry Anslinger, first commissioner of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, sent as a boy to the pharmacy for a neighbor screaming in withdrawal, an experience which led him to fear drugs without regard to context. Chasing the Scream is a fascinating history of the government's attempt to regulate and control the narcotics trade, often with unintended consequences.
The name of the book is The Wife Changing... No.
Nope, sorry. Chasing the Scream.
There we go. Chasing the Scream. I couldn't find the last part about the first and the last days of the war on drugs. There we go. Chasing the Scream, the first and the last days of the war on drugs. All right. Next, which has something to do with tidying up, I hear.
It does. The life-changing magic of tidying up, the Japanese art of decluttering and organizing by Marie Kondo. I find this a really fascinating book. For one thing, there are very few books every year that are selected for translation and sale in a foreign country, and even fewer of those are from the so-called self-help genre. Yet Marie Kondo's book on tidying one's home has become an international bestseller. It is decidedly a quirky little book. She has a very conversational style, and in a friendly way, she challenges readers to tidy their houses once and for all, and she claims that once you do it her way, you'll never have to do it again. She debunks the oft-touted room-by-room approach and says that if you tackle clutter little by little, you'll be doomed to do it forever. Ultimately, Kondo believes that a calmer, tidier home leads to a calmer, happier life, which I think is a compelling vision in any language.
That's right. So it is basically pulling up a dumpster and saying, does this stay or does this go, and following a criteria.
She goes category by category, and she also does believe if it's not something that brings you joy, it's got to go. So the dumpster would help.
Yeah, that boy, that's hard though. Bringing you joy part. That's very, very hard. All right. What else? We have one more book, right?
We have one more book. I brought in a book for young people. This is a book called The War That Saved My Life, which in and of itself I think is an intriguing title. And the author is Kimberly Bradley. And in Kimberly Bradley's new book for children, World War II and the threat of the Blitz proves to be a godsend for two children living in London at the time of the war. 9-year-old Ada has never left her one-room apartment. Her mother is too humiliated by Ada's disability, a twisted foot, to let her outside. So when her little brother Jamie is shipped out of London to escape the war, Ada doesn't lose the chance. She sneaks out to join him. So begins a new adventure for Ada and for Susan Smith, the woman who is forced to take the two kids in. As Ada teaches herself to ride a pony, learns to read, and watches for German spies, she begins to trust Susan, and Susan begins to love Ada and Jamie. But with the war drawing to a close, will love bond the three together, or will Ada and her brother return to the cruel life they've known? This story is an absolute winner. It combines heartbreak, humor, adventure, and love. And people always then ask me, well, what age would you suggest that book for? And I would say probably best for a 10 to 14-year-old on that one.
Well, for more information on Bat and Kill Books and the great work they do and on this entire list, you can go to their website is batandkillbooks.com, batandkillbooks.com. A reminder of the Curiosity Forum talk, The Underground Railroad Revisited, on the 15th of February at 4 p.m. at Hubbard Hall, and you can find out more by going to batandkillbooks.com. But better yet would be paying them a visit at
Absolutely.
15 East Main Street in Cambridge, New York. It's a welcoming, beautiful bookstore, and they're just waiting for you. batandkillbooks.com. Connie, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure as always, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you, Connie. Appreciate it.